Endowment for the Arts. Art works.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lura. Coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week. And then, if we have time, we're going to hear a really great talk. So stick around as we're fundraising here at WMNF, trying to raise $235,000 over 7 days. And I got to say that this morning on Democracy Now! And this morning on the Health and Nutrition and Sustainable Living Program, we really did well. Now in the next hour, we want to raise $3,000 and we will reach our goal. Thanks to Dennis Calandra. I think we already thanked him, but Dennis will thank you again. Thanks. Who says we need Democracy Now! And MNF more than ever. And Patty and Richard, thank you very much for your nice contributions. 813-238-8000. That's the number to call. Bob, you got some folks to thank?
Yeah, Nikki McNichols in Largo calling in for Democracy Now! And $25, very generous $25. Bruce Bandini in Clearwater, $20. Giving that to that goes for your show. Radioactivity.
Rodeo Activity.
Rodeo Activity. It's always a wild ride on your show,
Rob. It is
Rob.
A wild ride.
And another one for Rodeo Activity here is $100. We appreciate Sean's long-term dedication to excellent programming.
All right.
And love all the news and public affairs shows at WMNF. That's from Esther in Tampa.
Well, thank you, Esther.
And Sean and John have some people to thank. John, you want to thank that person?
Yeah, Timothy Fritz. He says Eve is his spirit animal. Generous $80 donation. And I just wanted to mention that Pizza Gregario brought some flatbread, sourdough flatbread, for our hungry volunteers there. Thank you,
that's,
Gregory.
That's really great. Sean, what do you got?
Rob, a $500 donation from David Hall. Thank you so much for that. Loves Radioactivity, and we appreciate all of the donations that we've gotten so far. Thank you to everyone who's contributed. Now it's time to hear from you. 813-238-8001. You can also pledge on the web at WMNF.org.
Well, that last person that you read is a challenger, and mm-hmm. he says that he will give that $500 if we get a $100 contributions. And thanks to Steele Olmsted and Pamela Hatley too. They made a $500 challenge, and Lisa Gillette and Hal Gillette from St. Petersburg, they're donating $100. So we've got two $500 challenges on the table, and that is that if we can get 10 $100 contributions over the next hour, we will get an extra $500 from those two generous donors that we talked about earlier. So let's see if we can do that. The number to call, 813-238-8001. We're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And while you're listening to it, please comment and send in your donation. You can go online at WMNF.org. Let us know what you're thinking about what's being said on Florida This Week. And we've got in this hour to raise $3,000. Let's see if we can do it. 813-238-8001. Here's Florida This Week. Coming up next, the president visits storm-ravaged Puerto Rico. After Las Vegas, what will the state legislature do about guns? Attorney General Pam Bondi wants to block O.J. Simpson from moving to Florida. And local high school students want the right to protest the same way some NFL players do. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
From the WEDU studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week, our panelists are Daryl Paulson is a professor emeritus of government at USF St. Petersburg. He's formerly Republican, but still considers himself a conservative. Mitch Perry is a political reporter at FloridaPolitics.com. Rochelle Reback is an attorney and a Democrat. And Ben Montgomery is an enterprise reporter at the Tampa Bay Times. Nice to have you here. Thank you for coming. Well, President Trump made a trip to hurricane-devastated Puerto Rico this week. During his four-hour visit, the president toured Guaynabo. That's a wealthy San Juan suburb known for its gated communities. it was largely spared when Hurricane Maria hit 2 weeks ago. The president promised to help the people of the island where electricity, clean drinking water, food, and medicine was only slowly reaching the countryside. All airports and nearly all ports have reopened, though. Thousands of federal workers are on the ground. More than 65% of grocery and big box stores have reopened. 64 of 68 hospitals are now open, and roughly 70% of gas stations are operational. The president told local officials that they should be proud that the death toll has been low, comparing Puerto Rico's experience to what he called the real catastrophe of Hurricane Katrina in 2005. And he joked to officials in Puerto Rico that after the hurricane, the U.S. territory is throwing the federal budget a little out of whack.
So, Ben, the president gets pretty good poll numbers when it comes to responding to the crisis in Houston after their hurricane and what happened in Florida and North Carolina and Georgia, South Carolina. But when the polls look at his numbers for Puerto Rico, the public's still pretty concerned that he's not addressing it correctly.
Fewer than a third, I think, of Puerto Ricans in the most recent polling thought his trip was valuable at all. He's a meme a minute. And in fact, in a Washington Post story, they had a couple of reporters posted up talking to refugees who were reuniting with their family members in Florida. And one of the refugees called him Mr. Tweet. I no longer call him Mr. President, I call him Mr. Tweet. This is interesting because they're expecting somewhere in the neighborhood of 100,000 Puerto Ricans to relocate to Florida. And if you recall, the margin in last year's presidential election was somewhere around 120,000 people. Well, if he's got 100,000 upset Puerto Ricans in Puerto Rico, not to mention their family members in Florida, it might be a problem for Republicans in a close presidential election. Who knows what happens in the midterms?
Darryl, did the president solve that problem this week? And what do you think about the potential for the Puerto Rican influx to Florida to change the political makeups?
Well, it's already changed the political makeup. We've already had 200,000 Puerto Ricans come to Florida since 2012, and they fundamentally altered Central Florida politics. I mean, Orange County, which used to be strong Republican, is now a Democratic stronghold. And that's what happens with demographic transformation, and it's likely to continue. And if you get another 100,000, that's certainly going to have an impact on changing politics, and perhaps on a statewide basis, where elections for governor and elections for president are always close in the state of Florida. Trump's problem is, you know, he doesn't seem to show compassion, where that's what he needs more than anything else, to show that he cares and will use all of the resources of the federal government to help out. Instead, he's got this flippant attitude and jokes about breaking the federal budget and tosses out paper towels. And I expected him to have an air gun and shooting out T-shirts to the people in the crowd saying, I love Puerto Rico. In fact, he was at an event today, a Hispanic event, and he kept talking about Puerto Rico several different times and pronouncing it different ways as if he thought that was somehow going to endear him to the crowd.
Mm-hmm. So, Shelley, what do you think about the president's trip? Did it help him, or what does he need to do? If it didn't help him, what does he need to do more of?
I don't think his relationship is salvageable. We have over a million people who identify as of Puerto Rican descent in Florida now. We're getting at least 100,000 more, and the Democratic Party, the Florida Democratic Party, is not going to be ignoring those people. They are going to be there for them, with them, recruiting them, registering people to vote who aren't registered, and basically welcoming them with open arms. I don't think that there's anything that Trump can do now to salvage his relationship with those people. I think their minds are made up.
They already are there. Bill Nelson just the other day was visiting a Puerto Rican neighborhood in Orlando preparing for his run against Rick Scott.
Well, Mitch, those pictures of the president throwing the paper towels, as Darryl said, that's pretty devastating.
Yeah.
It seems very disconnected, and Darryl used the word compassion. I mean, that's something that we want in our president.
Absolutely.
To have
empathizer in chief. Barack Obama was great at doing these things. He had many tragedies he had to deal with. That's what you need and want in a president. I mean, I think the bar gets so low with President Trump, but he was in Vegas on Wednesday. I think he did okay, but he got like high marks because of what happened in Puerto Rico the day before. But more importantly, Rob, you talked about what's going on the island there. I mean, it's really bad. I was reading this morning, still 90% of people don't have electricity, 50% don't have running water. You know, Marco Rubio was there last week. He said we really need to bring the Department of defense in here because you have this logistical nightmare of getting goods and services around. And I think the federal government was late to this. Trump came in 13 days after the incident happened. We're day 16 now. And I guess in a way that after Harvey, after Irma, there's a little bit of a burnout here, and the fact that the island is not part of the lower 48, so to speak. But, you know, these are American citizens, and I think that he was slow to react to that. And absolutely, he's going to pay a political price. It could be a devastating one if he's the president in 2020 running for reelection. But right now, there's still a crisis at hand down on the island.
And he refused, for example, to allow them to use food stamps for prepared fast food, which is pretty much what's available now, mm-hmm. other than these very minimal donated meals. They call them meals, but it's just a snack, really.
But they did change that, I believe.
Daryl, if we look back at Katrina, President Bush received some early on, received some bad marks for his approach to Katrina. Politically speaking, how long did that last?
Oh, yeah, I think it fundamentally altered the rest of his presidential career, obviously, because you're oftentimes judged on the big events that happened during your tenure. And so Bush gets judged on Iraq and no weapons of mass destruction there, and on Hurricane Katrina, where they had the flyover event, which was the big event, where he didn't land, he didn't express compassion there. He was told by advisors that it would interfere with the rescue that was taking place in New Orleans at the time. But it created the image of him as really not caring and just passing over all of these people who were tremendously suffering. And so it does set up this permanent image of the president and whether they have done what they're supposed to do or have failed in their test of time.
Former President George H.W. Bush used to, people mocked him at times, and there was a thing saying, message, I care, you know, as if he wasn't really sincere, but at least play at being sincere, you know? And that's something that you got to be an actor, if, you know, part of this job as a commander-in-chief and the leader. And there's, again, like I say, there's an empathy, you know, gene missing there. And I think you can't hide that.
I just want to add, it's not just Trump. Who among his staff thought that that was a good idea to let him throw paper towels to the crowd?
I don't think they planned on him throwing the paper towels. And if you isolate that as a moment, it was, President, you'll just, you know, pass out some paper towels to the people. Who can mess that up except him, you know?
All right, so and the final and the big question is, when does Puerto Rico get back to normal? Because, as Mitch said, a lot of people still don't have potable water, a lot don't have electricity. Some of the roads are still impassable now all these days afterwards. I mean, the question of rescuing these people who are still in dire shape, I mean, the president, I think, needs to do something significant and not just travel there.
Well, he did have a point that it's much more difficult in Puerto Rico than it was in Texas or Florida, because in Texas and Florida, you saw thousands of electrical trucks coming from all over the United States, from Canada, coming into this area and quickly restoring power to Florida and Texas. I mean, it's not easy to do in Puerto Rico. You can't just put them on a boat and send them over there. But the longer the crisis lasts, the more this will become a major problem and a major political issue for the Republican Party and for President Trump.
I saw the statistic. FEMA spent $691 million in grants to Irma victims in Florida, $323 million to Texas, and as of Tuesday, $35 million in Puerto Rico.
Very tiny number to 3.4 million people. Well, the Las Vegas shooter carried out the largest mass killing in modern U.S. history once lived on Florida's East Coast.
64-year-old Stephen Paddock once lived in Vieira, that's north of Melbourne. Neighbors say they saw nothing out of the ordinary and that he was very open about the fact that he was a professional gambler. The massacre of 58 people and the wounding of more than 400 others shocked the nation and brought calls by some for more control over high-powered weapons that can be altered or manipulated to fire automatically. A Democratic state senator from Orlando renewed her call to ban the sale of assault weapons here in Florida. State Senator Linda Stewart said that Americans should be free to attend large events and not be intimidated by the possibility of being mowed down in rapid fire. Her bill defines assault weapons as a gun capable of fully automatic, semi-automatic, or burst fire at the option of the user, and specifies several types of weapons in the ban, including AK-47s and AR-15s. The bill would also ban sales of magazines that contain more than 7 rounds of ammunition.
So, Mitch, is Tallahassee likely to pass any sort of gun control legislation this year, given the fact that we went through the Pulse massacre just a year ago? And
nothing happened after that. In fact, I was looking, Rob, there was over 14 bills, more than that, last year in the legislature. Most of them were pro-Second Amendment, if you will, bills filed by Greg Stubbe from Sarasota, all about guns in airports, guns on campus, guns in theater. No, but, you know, federally, you mentioned in the setup there about this, what they call them, bump stocks, right? And that's what we're hearing, because this allows a semi-automatic gun to become like a machine gun, which is totally not allowed, not legal. And you are seeing Republicans talk in Congress about perhaps supporting that. We'll have to see on that. You know, the thing about this legislation is that it actually addresses a problem would happen on Sunday night. You know, a lot of this legislation, the critics of gun control say, is that bill wouldn't do anything about what happened in this recent tragedy. There's nobody can really deny that this man still would have shot and killed people if you had not had bump stocks, if you will, but not as many people. I think it's arguably that would be the case. And so I think we might see something in Washington anyway.
Yeah, nothing's going to happen in Tallahassee. I mean, this is the state of stand your ground laws. This is the state of open carry. This is the state where they're, you know, last year tried to get the guns on college campuses, which is such a swell idea. It's ridiculous what's going on. But the federal government, I think you're really going to have the first probably real change in gun policy. And the reason I say that is the NRA, for the first time, has come out and said they're open to changing the regulations with respect to bump stocks. And this has never happened before. The NRA is basically giving a message to Republicans who have been on their side, because NRA money has funneled almost exclusively to Republicans, that, yeah, you can make some changes in this area. We're going to have to. But they're calling for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms to make the regulation rather than to have Congress pass it.
What's the difference, by the way, Darrell? Do you know why that's they want to do that?
I think they look at it as more limited, coming from a federal agency, and also at some point in the future, if they need to, they can alter that much more easily than getting Congress to. And interestingly, Steve Scalise, who was shot, you know, a couple of months ago in this Republican softball practice, came out yesterday and basically said, you know, this is not a good idea. He'll be on Meet the Press on Sunday, and he basically says this may not be a good idea to rush into this because it's simply too early, too quick, and we may not know the best way to handle this.
Well, here's my question about Tallahassee. Is there a disconnect between what Florida voters think and what Tallahassee politicians do on the issue of guns, or is there pretty much a feeling among Florida voters that automatic weapons and bump fire weapons and semi-automatic weapons, it's all good?
Well, you mentioned stand your ground. That has consistently polled well, actually, since the Trayvon Martin incident we all learned about. And Ben, I know you did a big story about that years ago. Other, like, universal background checks, Floridians and the United States citizens want that big time. And you remember it came up for a vote in 2013, got 54 votes in the Senate, needed 60. So, but yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we've learned this week also that everybody talks about the NRA, right? And especially liberals talk about the power of the NRA. And we've learned that actually it isn't that much money they've given over the years. I saw the Washington Post story said only $3.5 million over the last 20 years, since 1998, to Congress. There's the image of them being so powerful, but...
But there's other organizations that are aligned with the gun industry that also funnel money to the politicians.
But I think the public actually is supportive. They like their guns, you know? And I think the politicians always have to answer not to... I mean, people say this, they answer to the NRA, not to the public. But I don't know. I think that if there's been less support for gun control over the last 18 years. I mean, that's I think we can agree on that if you look at a lot of polling. But again... What's happening this time? Because the bump stocks, you can actually maybe do something that could have changed it.
But this is also go to the issue of single issue voters. That is that NRA supporters and gun rights supporters are more likely to vote on that issue alone, given all the other issues. The one they really care about and the real litmus test for them is guns and access to these kind of guns, and that they're not, you know, the other issues they don't care about. So, and they come out and vote in big numbers.
Well, that's why the NRA position on this is so important, because they're sending a message not only to legislators and to members of Congress, but they're sending a message to their constituents, the people who join the NRA, that we're going to have to make some changes here. And the public demands this, and if we don't make these minor changes with respect to bump stocks, which now 9 of the 16 Republicans in the Florida congressional delegation have come out and said they support some alteration in this, that never would have happened before. Times are different now.
That's what's interesting to me is this. It suggests, maybe for the first time in my lifetime, that the NRA is vulnerable. I'm not so sure the bump stock issue is not a distraction from some other stuff that they're going to have to address in the future. But it's a vulnerability that we're seeing for the very first time.
And it's a coming together of people of disparate interests and communities. For example, there was a big effort on behalf of the Pulse victims to help the Las Vegas victims. Those are two very disparate communities, country music fans
and the
LGBT community and Hispanic community out of Orlando. We heard that Paddock also scouted Fenway Park as a possible location.
Coachella as well.
Yeah, and Coachella.
These are
very disparate communities of people that all of a sudden are vulnerable, and have something in common.
See, they may be targets. All right. Well, O.J. Simpson's lawyer is outraged with Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi, blasting her as possibly the stupidest person on the planet.
Last week, Bondi's office released a letter urging the Florida Department of Corrections to deny Simpson a transfer to serve parole here in Florida now that he has been released from prison on kidnapping and armed robbery charges. She called Simpson a scofflaw whose notoriety would be a drain on law enforcement. Simpson's attorney challenged that, telling the Tampa Bay Times that Bondi has zero standing to even talk about Simpson's case. Simpson's grown children live here in the Tampa Bay area, and he had been living in South Florida at the time of his arrest. Simpson's attorney says that the former athlete plans to move here once Nevada approves it.
So, Shelley, does the attorney general have any say into whether Simpson can move to Florida?
No, she doesn't. She has no say. Just like any other citizen, if she wants to write a letter in her individual capacity complaining about releasing or transferring O.J. Simpson to a residence in Florida, that's fine. I could do it. You could do it. But in terms of her status as the Florida Attorney General, she has absolutely no standing to stop his transfer. It's part of an interstate compact between all the states, and it's basically a ministerial thing. If he has ties to this state, which we heard in the intro that he did, he lived here at the time of his arrest, his children are here, he has strong ties to this state community, and if he can support himself, those are the basic criteria that the Department of Corrections looks at to see if the transfer is appropriate.
You know, Pam Bondi got some play on this. Why would she take this up as an issue? What's behind is
politicians love to engage in position taking the correct position on an issue. Probably 90% of Floridians agree with her position on this. They don't want OJ to come to Florida, so it's going to be a very popular political position, whatever her political future has. But she also realizes she's not going to be successful. She went on to say he's a model prisoner. He's got family in Florida. He lived in Florida before he went to prison. I want conditions put on him. Well, there are always conditions on parolees.
Right. I have two things to say about this. Number one, it's long past time for white politicians to be telling black people where they can live without any authority to do so. Where they can live, how they can vote or can't vote, where they can work. I mean, this is ridiculous. But I do think that part of her rationale for coming out and taking this otherwise ridiculous position is we are facing the issue of felon reenfranchisement coming up on the ballot soon. And I think this is her sort of subtle way of saying, you reenfranchise these people, you're going to have every felon coming to Florida. But that's ridiculous. I mean, let's look at where we are in Florida. We have George Zimmerman living in Florida. We have Casey Anthony living in Florida. What makes OJ so special?
All right. Well, there was a protest this week organized by Manatee High School students against a school district requirement that students be required to get their parents' permission to take a knee during the national anthem if they want to protest injustice.
A small group of young people and supporters took part. They want the school board to change its policy. While many National Football League players have been kneeling all season to bring attention to racial injustice in the country, the school district recently sent an email reminding school athletic directors that students must stand during the anthem unless they have parental permission.
So, Daryl, Who's right on this? Should the students have the right to kneel, or should they get their parents' permission before they do it?
Well, this has already been addressed by the Supreme Court, not this particular issue, but a very similar one back in 1969, Tinker versus Des Moines, where students at a high school were protesting the Vietnam War, decided to wear armbands to school, and then the school board said anybody wearing armbands will be dismissed from school. And so several students wore armbands. They were dismissed. It went before the United States Supreme Court, and a 7-2 Supreme Court said students do not shed their constitutional rights to freedom of expression at the schoolhouse door. And so I think it's very similar to that. But I also have a great sympathy for people who object to this taking a knee, whether it's football players or not. One in the Florida congressional delegation who protested vigorously was Brian Mast, who can't take a knee because he doesn't have any. He got his knees and legs blown off in Afghanistan. And so I can see why he has some problems with people who do this, just as I can see parents who have lost someone in a wartime situation and confront a flag-draped casket. Look at this as an affront to them and their loved ones.
Should a returning soldier or should a first responder consider someone taking a knee an affront to them, or is the protest about something else?
No, this is a perfect example of white privilege. This ability to change what is the people who are taking a knee, their protest is injustice. Their protest is discrimination. You make it about disrespect to veterans or the flag. The people taking a knee don't. That's not their issue. Their issue is something completely different. And I don't know why we allow the issue to be defined by people who turn it into something that it isn't.
It is tiresome hearing people say that this is a protest against the police in general or against the troops
right.
in general, when in fact it is very clearly a protest against 250 years of slavery and 90 years of Jim Crow and 60 years of, separate but equal and 35 years of racist housing policy
exactly.
and a couple of hundred years. A couple of hundred years of being mistreated by bad police officers.
We're out of time. I wish we could discuss this more. But before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention to? Mitch, sorry about that. Which are the big stories?
There's an election on Tuesday. House District 58, which is the Plant City area, Eastern Hillsborough County, between Republicans Lawrence McClure and Yvonne Fry. And it's getting really nasty. And basically, it's McClure is really the pro-Trump candidate. Fry is considered the more moderate one. And so it'll be interesting to see in this little slice of Republican Hillsborough County, although, by the way, there's more Democrats registered in the district, who's going to come out on top of this. And as a reporter, I'm glad this thing's over on Tuesday, by the way.
It's kind of a little dirty. Other big story, Ben.
I'm going to be watching this storm for the next couple of days. You never know what these things are going to do. And then besides that, it's been a rough week. I'm going to pay attention to the opening downtown Tampa of Donation, where they serve uncooked cookies to the masses.
All right.
Imagine if they bring in baked cookies.
And it's from Metropolitan Ministries.
Sure enough.
All right, Shelley, your other big story.
I'm very excited about the fact that the city of St. Petersburg has planted a flag for campaign finance reform. Mm. They just voted to restrict the amount of money in citywide campaign races and for more disclosure and transparency as to where the money's coming from. This is a very controversial law. They know it's a controversial law. It may get to the United States Supreme Court, but I'm very excited to see someone nationally finally being a pioneer in campaign finance reform.
First city of the nation to do that. Darryl, your other big story.
Well, I hate that St. Pete did that, but that's not my story of the week. My story is the Supreme Court case of Gill versus Whitford, which is dealing with a Wisconsin political gerrymander. We've had political gerrymandering since, 1805, when the term was first used. And partisan gerrymandering has always been upheld by the Supreme Court. They've outlawed racial gerrymandering, but not partisan. They came close in 2004 in a 4-4 ruling. And one of the justices who wasn't ready to overturn partisan gerrymandering was Justice Kennedy, who said at some point in the future, if they can come up with a vehicle to measure partisan gerrymandering, then we might provide some relief. Well, they've developed what is called the efficiency gap, which measures partisan gerrymandering. The court is reviewing whether or not this is that standard and will it be upheld. But you've got 200 years of precedence that may be overturned. And the real impact here is not only will it overturn partisan gerrymandering in Wisconsin, it will overturn it in one-third of the states.
It could have huge implications in Florida if they choose for the opposition
in
Wisconsin.
In my view, terrible implications.
All right. Well, finally this week, we say goodbye to Tom Petty, the scrappy rock and roller from Gainesville.
Back down. Hey, baby.
Petty combined his early love of Elvis and the Beatles, Southern roots music with California hip, to rise to become one of the most loved musicians of the last 40 years. He eventually joined a supergroup with his idols Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison, and George Harrison. He died of cardiac arrest this week, shortly after ending a nationwide tour. Well, thank you for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
Hi, fellow MNF listeners. My name is Tal Milliken, and I'd like to relate a story. Long ago and far away, I had aspirations of being an airline pilot and was in aviation school. Well, that didn't work out. But one day at one of my flight lessons, my instructor told me it was time for me to land the plane by myself. As he climbed out, he smiled and gave me a thumbs up. Now that night, when my head hit the pillow, I reflected on what was not such a big deal to the thousands of employed pilots out there, but it was something I could be personally proud of. Now all these years later, I get that same feeling every time I tune into one of Tampa's crown jewels, WMNF FM radio. You see, I'm a friends and family supporter of the station. Now, nobody in the station's listening area really cares about that, but it's something I'm personally proud of. And I'm asking everyone who's listening right now, if you like just one program on the best little radio station on planet Earth, put a little money where your ears are. I don't think any of us want to wake up some morning and hear white noise at 88.5 on our dial. Look, I'm a working stiff like most MNF listeners. I don't buy antiques or take lavish vacations, and I sometimes struggle to make the bills on time. But I'm happy to sacrifice a few dollars every month out of my checking account to keep MNF on the airwaves, and I really never miss it. In fact, I smile a little bit when it pops up on my bank statement. Do yourself proud when your head hits the pillow tonight, and become a listener supporter. WMNF. We must nurture freedom.
Well, that's one of our friends of the station, Tal Milliken, who's a supporter, and he recorded that a few weeks ago, asked us to play it. That was great. Thanks, Tal, for that. You can make your donation at WMNF.org. We just heard Florida This Week. Daryl Paulson was on that show. Rochelle Reback, Mitch Perry, and Ben Montgomery were all on that show. Mitch and Ben being the journalist, Daryl the Republican, Rochelle the Democrat. And thanks a lot for listening. I hope you enjoy our playing it every Monday at 11 o'clock. I'm Rob Lori, joined by Sean Canaan and the Commuter. And we've got $2,900 to raise in our part of the fund drive now until 1 o'clock. And we have a challenge. We have two people who will promise us to give $500 each if we can get 10 people to donate $100 in the next hour and a half. 813-238-8001 is our phone number. Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. It's so great during the fundraising drives to hear from our listeners who support the station. Tal, that was a great recording that he made. And now we want to hear your testimonial. And especially, you know, even if you don't want to record one necessarily, but just with your donation, you can say, here's my $50. I think WMNF is worth it. I'd like to contribute, like Tal does, to the circle of friends and be a supporter every single month. Here's my $10 a month or whatever it is that you can afford. Give us a call right now, 813-238-8001, or make a support of a pledge on the web at WMNF.org.
And remember, we need 10 people donating $100. We just got one. Susan Sampson from Tampa just donated $120. Mm-hmm. This is an increase to her current Circle of Friends membership, loves all the shows, and wants to spread the love. Susan, thank you so much. And that means that we need to hear from 9 more donations of $100 or more, and we'll reach our goal. And thanks to a Wawa in Carrollwood, located at 15524 North Del Mabry Highway in Tampa, for sending hoagie sandwiches and chips For our definitely hungry volunteers. It goes well with the beer, right? No, I didn't.
Absolutely. Anything goes good with beer.
See, I just had to say beer and then you would jump in.
Anything goes good with beer. I take that back. Something about a German chocolate cake doesn't quite go with beer.
Or ice cream.
Ice cream, no. Mm-hmm. Beer float, I'm not on it. Donna Williams in Newport Richey calling in with $80 going to get Running Down a Dream, the Tom Petty tribute, and Rob's show is their favorite.
Thank you. Thank you, Donna. Well, we're going to hear a really great talk in just a moment, but we need to hear from some listeners right now. If you're a fan of Florida This Week and are playing it on Monday morning, call us up right now. Let us know that you're out there. It's a thoughtful conversation about some of the big issues. You know, I wish the show was longer. I wish we had more time to discuss the issues. We were able to discuss four or five every week, plus the stories of the week. So if you appreciate a thoughtful conversation that has a Republican and a Democrat usually, and then usually a couple of professors and journalists, please let us know that you're out there and you enjoy listening to us play the audio from this TV show that airs on public TV locally, 813-238-8001. And you can also make your donation on our website, WMNF.org. We ask about five or six questions. It takes about a minute and a half to fill out the form, and your donation will be sent to us right here in the air studio. And Sean, if we got nine more $100 contributions, we would get an extra $1,000.
That'll take us so close to our goal. So you could be really a major part of us helping to get this show to its goal if you called 813-238-8001 and said, here's my $100 contribution. I think that Radioactivity, Florida This Week, Midpoint, all the great Democracy Now!, all the great news and public affairs shows that are on Monday mornings, these are all worth supporting. Here's a $100 contribution. Well, you can do that on the web at WMNF.org, or you can donate by phone, 813-238-8001.
And Florida This Week is a pretty interesting conversation because there's nowhere on the radio dial that you're going to hear a half an hour devoted to some of the big state and local stories with some of the smartest people in the Tampa Bay area on every week on every show. I got to say that, you know, my producer Spencer Briggs does a great job of putting together a really great panel. So please help us keep this show on the radio. You can see it on TV on Friday nights on WEDU, but it's also probably helpful as you're driving around doing your work on Monday morning to be able to hear it on the radio. So please call us up, 813-238-8001. We just need nine more $100 contributions and we'll be there. Next, we're going to hear a talk by Chris Hedges. Chris is an award-winning journalist. He worked for the New York Times for many years. He covered war zones all over the world. He's been a guest on this radio show, on the 11 o'clock Radioactivity show. And he's even wrote a book. Part of the book was about the working conditions of farm workers in Immokalee. And he's written a lot of books over the years. Chris has a new talk about stopping fascism coming to the U.S., and it's an incredible talk. You can have it for your $80 contribution if you call us right now, and maybe make it a $120 contribution, get an M&F T-shirt and the talk, and then you'll also help with the match. 813-238-8001. Sean, I know there was something more you wanted to say, though. I see you, you know, kind of like grabbing at the mic and
yeah, well, I mean, hey, this Chris Hedges talk for an $80 contribution or that special that you just mentioned, two for one, essentially a $120 contribution for a T-shirt and a CD. That's great. You're going to love this Chris Hedges speech. He's always excellent, always very knowledgeable. And you can get a copy of this speech for an $80 contribution by calling 813-238-8001.
This is not only a fight for life. It is a fight that gives life. It is the supreme expression of faith. It is the belief that no matter how great is the power of evil, the power of love is greater. Yeah. I do not, in the end, fight fascists because I will win. I fight fascists because they are fascists. Thank you.
That's Chris Hedges, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Chris Hedges on stopping fascism. One dictionary defines fascism as a system of government that exercises a dictatorship of the extreme right, typically through the merging of state and business leadership, together with belligerent nationalism. The first fascist party was founded by Mussolini in Italy in 1915. Its etymology is traced to the Latin word meaning a bundle of rods tied around an axe, an ancient Roman symbol of authority. Today, the term for many immediately conjures up horrific images of stormtroopers. But contemporary fascism has undergone a major wardrobe change. Could it happen here? Some see elements of it now with what is called populism, America First, coupled with a largely imagined past, Make America Great Again. The media are denounced as the enemy of the people, a phrase Stalin used. Critics of the leader are bullied and insulted. Our guest today is Chris Hedges. He's an award-winning journalist who has covered wars in the Balkans, the Middle East, and Central America. He writes a weekly column for truthdig.org and is a senior fellow at the Nation Institute. He's the author of many books, including Wages of Rebellion. He spoke at the Aladdin Theater in Portland, Oregon, in a benefit for KBOO Community Radio. And now, Chris Hedges on Stopping Fascism.
The decision by the deep state in ancient Rome. Like the United States in 2017, dominated by a bloated military and corrupt oligarchy. To strangle the Emperor Commodus in his bath in the year 192 did not halt the growing chaos and precipitous decline of the Roman Empire. Commodus, like a number of other late Roman empires, and like Donald Trump, was incompetent and consumed by his own vanity. He commissioned innumerable statues of himself as Hercules and had little interest in governance. He used his position as head of state to make himself the star of his own ongoing public show. He fought victoriously as a gladiator in the arena in fixed bouts. Power for Commodus, as it is for Trump, was primarily about catering to his bottomless narcissism, hedonism, and lust for wealth. He sold public offices so the ancient equivalents of Betsy DeVos and Steve Mnuchin could orchestrate a vast kleptocracy. Commodus was replaced by the reformer Pertinax, the Bernie Sanders of his day, who attempted to curb the unchecked power of the Praetorian Guards, the ancient version of the military-industrial complex. This effort saw the Praetorian Guards assassinate Pertinax after 3 months in office. The Guards then auctioned off the office of emperor to the highest bidder. The next emperor, Didius Julianus, lasted 66 days. There would be five emperors in 193 AD, the year after the assassination of Commodus. Trump and our decaying empire have ominous historical precedents. If the deep state replaces Trump, whose ineptitude and imbecility are embarrassing to the empire, that action will not restore our democracy any more than replacing Commodus restored the Republic to Rome. The choice is between inept fascists like Trump and competent fascists like Pence. Our republic is dead. The idiots, seeing in the decay the chance for personal advancement and profit, take over in the final days of crumbling civilizations. Idiot generals wage endless, unwinnable wars that bankrupt the nation. Idiot economists call for reducing taxes for the rich and cutting social service programs for the poor, and project economic growth on the basis of myth. Idiot industrialists poison the water, the soil, and the air, slash jobs, and depress wages. Idiot bankers gamble on self-created financial bubbles and impose crippling debt peonage on the citizens. Idiot journalists and public intellectuals pretend despotism is democracy. Idiot intelligence operatives orchestrate the overthrowing of foreign governments to create lawless enclaves that give rise to enraged fanatics. And idiot professors, experts, and specialists busy themselves with unintelligible jargon and arcane theory that buttress the policies of the rulers. Idiot entertainers and producers create lurid spectacles of sex, gore, and fantasy. There is a familiar checklist for extinction. We are ticking off every item on it. The idiots know only one word: more. They are unencumbered by common sense. They hoard wealth and resources until workers cannot make a living and the infrastructure collapses. They live in privileged compounds where they eat chocolate cake and order missile strikes. They see the state as a projection of their own vanity. The Roman, Mayan, French, Habsburg, Ottoman, Romanov, Wilhelmine, Pahlavi, and Soviet dynasties crumbled because the whims and obsessions of ruling idiots were law. Trump is the face of our collective idiocy. He is what lies behind the mask of our professed civility and rationality, a sputtering, narcissistic, bloodthirsty megalomaniac. This face in the past was hidden, at least to most white Americans. But with the destruction of democratic institutions and the disempowerment of the citizen, the oligarchs and the kleptocrats have become brazen. They no longer need to pretend. They steal and lie openly. They wield armies and fleets against the wretched of the earth, blithely ignore the looming catastrophe caused by global warming, and cannibalize the nation, while at night, like some monster from the Grand Guignol, the idiot in chief, overseeing our self-immolation, sits slack-jawed in front of a television set before opening his beautiful Twitter account. Forget the firing of James Comey. Forget the paralysis in Congress. Forget the inanity of a press that covers our descent into tyranny as if it were a sports contest between corporate Republicans and corporate Democrats or a reality show starring our maniacal president. Forget the noise. The crisis we face is not embodied in the public images of the politicians that run our dysfunctional government. The crisis we face is the result of a four-decade-long slow-motion corporate coup d'etat that has left corporations and the war machine omnipotent, turned our electoral system into legalized bribery, and elevated public figures who master the arts of entertainment and artifice. Trump is the symptom. He is not the disease. Our descent into despotism began with the pardoning of Richard Nixon, all of whose impeachable crimes are now legal. And the extrajudicial assault, including targeted assassinations and imprisonment, carried out on dissidents and radicals, especially black radicals. This assault, done in the name of law and order, put the organs of internal security, from the FBI
to Homeland Security beyond the reach of the law. It began with the creation of corporate-funded foundations and organizations that took control of the press, the courts, the universities, scientific research, and the two major political parties. It began with empowering militarized police to kill unarmed citizens and the spread of a horrendous system of mass incarceration and the death penalty.
Well, that's a former journalist, Chris Hedges, who's now a public speaker. He's written a lot of books. He lives in Princeton, New Jersey, and he used to cover wars, and he was so angry at what he saw the U.S. doing around the world that he came back home after probably 20 years in the field covering wars, being an award-winning journalist, mainly for the New York Times, and said, you know, we got to stop what's going on because I see it firsthand, but the American people don't know what's going on. And so now he's become an incredible author of books. And this talk that we're listening to right now is called Stopping Fascism. It can be yours on a CD for a donation of $80. Please call us up. This is one of the most impassioned talks about the Trump administration you're going to find. Please get it for your $80 contribution and help keep this radio station on the air. It comes to us from Alternative Radio, which is one of the series that used to be on our main channel. We put those, some of those public affairs shows on our HD3 channel so we could bring you local call-in shows like you're going to hear later on today. But it's still on our HD3 channel every Thursday, and it is a great series. It's called Alternative Radio. Please call us up, 813-238-8001, and pledge your support. A few minutes ago, we needed 9 more people to donate $100, and we would get an extra $1,000 because of 2 challenges. Thanks to Daryl Queen from St. Petersburg, made a $10 a month increase to his circle of friends, and so that means that we need to hear from 8 more $100 donors. And Yvonne Goujolet. Yvonne, thanks a lot. She's a volunteer here. She says hi to Rob and Sean, and she is taking the M&F baseball cap for her $10 a month Circle of Friends contribution. So Sean, we need 7 more $100 contributions.
Well, it's only 6 now because Thomas Rain from Tarpon Springs says he enjoys the call-in shows and the different perspectives, and he's a new Circle of Friends member at the $10 a month level, so that means that's another $100 that we can count toward that match. We only need 6 more people to donate $100 or more, and we'll get an extra $1,000 from 2 generations listeners who have donated $500 each. 813-238-8001.
And Sean, right after the NPR news, which is coming up in 3 minutes, we're going to hear more of this talk by Chris Hedges.
Yeah,
on your show.
Yeah, coming up on Midpoint. And you know, Chris Hedges, eventually in this talk, he will tell us how he really feels about Donald Trump and about fascism. 813-238-8001 if you want to get a copy of this speech for $80.
Don't hold anything back.
That's right.
Diane Lekich and Newport Richie. I love Rob Lori, Democracy Now, Radioactive, and everything else. And she's going to go $100. So there's
right.
only
that
5 left.
5 more.
Yeah. And she's going to get one of those new T-shirts. And let's make that 4 more because Daryl Queen, which you just read, he upped his pledge another $10, right? His circle of friends, Daryl Queen.
Well, okay.
He's also going to throw us $100 just to help make that challenge.
Oh, I see.
You go.
So we need 4 more $100 contributions.
And he's going to get one of those T-shirts, too. And
we're going to hear more of this talk from Chris Hedges right after the NPR News on the Midpoint program with Sean Canaan. But right now, we'd like to get 1 more donation. You can make it online. That would really help us out because before 12 noon, we'd like to get at least 1 more $100 contribution. But you can make a donation of any amount. I know if you're a graduate student, if you're a high school student or a college student, it's hard. Money is not easy to come by. But how about $10 a year to support your community radio station that opens up the window to all sorts of ideas that no other radio station is going to bring you, no other TV station is going to bring you, and you're not going to see Chris Hedges on the op-ed pages of the Wall Street Journal New York Times. 813-238-8001. Let's see if we get one more donation.
I would assume the Wall Street Journal is out, that you'll never see Chris Hedges in a Wall Street Journal.
Exactly. But Chris has done it all. He went to Immokalee. He went to Indian reservations a few years ago. and looked at the poverty, the widespread poverty, and asked, why is this happening? And he looked at alcohol sales on Indian reservations and found that people were being exploited. He looked at the Immokalee workers and said, these folks are being exploited because some of the farms that they work for are making hundreds of millions of dollars. The book that came out about the kind of like the zones where the U.S. had given up and just created more and more poverty. It's a great book, and too bad we don't have it this marathon. We gave it away a few marathons ago. But anyway, we're going to hear more of Chris Hedges right after the news. Let's see if we can get one line lit, Sean, 813-238-8001.
We really need to hear from you. It's the top of the hour. You're listening to WMNF Tampa. We're going to go to NPR News in just a few minutes and then come back with more Chris Hedges. But we really need your support of Radioactivity or any of the Monday programming. Do you like Eve's show? Do you like John's Sustainable Living show or Democracy Now or Radioactivity or Midpoint? Please give us a call right now. Here's the number, 813-238-8001. Give us a call right now.
And if you could be a $500 donor, that would help us a lot. We're still about $2,600 away from reaching the goal, and we're hoping to get that match this hour. We're hoping to get those last four people to make a $100 contribution. So we have about an hour to go, and we need four people to donate $100, and that would secure an extra $1,000 for us. This is WMNF Tampa. Here's the news.